Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into the one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business. Take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theathletic, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theathletic to take your retail business to the next level today. shopify.com/theathletic.
The Athletic.
It is Straight Outta Cobham, a show about Chelsea FC from The Athletic. Today, a rare weekend of positivity. Blades are put to the sword. There are back-to-back home league wins for the first time in 2023. The women's team end the year top of the league, and the under-18s score 9. Available for free wherever you get your podcasts and ad-free on The Athletic. This is Straight Outta Cobham. Back with you for another couple of shows before our Christmas break then, listener. Hope you're well. It's me, Matt. I'm joined today by the returning Dominic Fifield. Hi, Dom.
Hi, Matt. How are you?
I am cooler than a Michael Olise penalty. Thank you very much. Liam Toomey's also with us. You okay, Liam?
I'm excellent. Not only have we got a win to talk about, but I don't have a quiz to do.
Yeah. That's what you think.
Nor I want to moderate, thankfully, right, after last week's unpleasantness. Right, we got some good stuff to talk about today, so let's get to it, shall we?
Here's Palmer, Sterling, across and in! Chelsea find the way through, and it's Cole Palmer again. Mudrick, Palmer trying to repay the favour to Raheem Sterling. Was he pulled back there, Sterling? It may well have been. Finished off anyway by Nicholas Jackson.
This victory is important in the way that that happened, because in first half we didn't find a way to block the low block, but in the second half we changed it. I think we were good enough and very aggressive in the last third with the capacity to score goals and win the game.
Chelsea 2, Sheffield United 0. I was mentally writing another script of misery at halftime after a laboured and lacklustre first half, but Chelsea found some quality in the second period and put the worst team in the league to bed to register back-to-back home league wins for the first time in way too long. Simon was there for The Athletic. Here's what he had to say at full-time.
I'm going to make this all about me to start off with. There's been some outrageous allegations from my colleague Liam Toomey that I'm some kind of jinx for this Chelsea Football Club. Well, actually, that perhaps they're not that outrageous, because before this game started, I calculated that I hadn't seen Chelsea win a home league game in the Premier League since January against Dom Fifield's mighty Crystal Palace. So my 1 year anniversary was fast approaching, and I must admit, after watching a tepid, woeful first half, I was fully expecting my terrible streak to continue. So if anyone feels more indebted to Carl Palmer than me, I'll be very surprised. Carl Palmer made the difference, as we are getting used to saying on a fairly regular basis when Chelsea do well. It was his neat interplay with Sterling for the first goal, when the first bit of quality from Chelsea really in the match, and then his simple assist, although it's anything simple when you're passing to Nicholas Jackson, which secured the 3 points. Then no one will get carried away. with this win. You know, Sheffield United are a struggling side against relegation, but we've seen that, you know, Chelsea hate playing these kind of teams that sit defensively and play for set pieces. And for a long time, it looked like that was going to work yet again. But they, at least they found a way, like I said, with Cole Palmer, to get the 3 points and just lift the mood a little bit before what is a huge game against Newcastle. What I would argue, a much bigger game than this one, obviously. Some might disagree, given Chelsea's league position, but the League Cup is a lot easier to win, arguably, than Chelsea climbing the league table, given their inconsistency. So I was a bit disappointed that Nkunku didn't come on. I think it's probably the biggest letdown for the crowd, apart from the first half performance. Because, you know, with the points pretty much won in the last few minutes, Sheffield United had effectively given up. But for some reason, Pochettino resisted the opportunity to just give him a token run out. I don't think he'd have had to break sweat. But yeah, he's just, I suppose, just letting Nkunku get a taste of the bench first before unleashing him on the opposition. But yeah, all in all, a pretty sort of run-of-the-mill victory, but Chelsea don't get to enjoy many of those, so perhaps we should enjoy it. And my last note would be to talk about Petrovic. As far as home league debuts go, full debuts, he couldn't have had a much easier one than that.
We got loads of tweets on this game. One of them came from Lewis, who says, a performance we've been waiting for, not in the sense it was vintage Chelsea, but rather getting the result when we've been pretty decent, but not great. Solid sevens all over the pitch. Liam, was the key here that little half-time tweak that Mauricio Pochettino made, swapping the positions of Palmer and Sterling? I mean, that's a kind of easy conclusion to jump to, right? Because they were both involved in both the goals.
Yeah, I thought for a minute he might consider Luke Bosch's tactical innovation of putting a left footer on the left and a right footer on the right. He didn't quite do that, but the tweaking did help, I think. I think it helped Palmer do what I think he does best in this Chelsea team, which is find little pockets of space in the final third to receive the ball on the half turn and then do damage from those areas. And you know, that's where... laid the ball off to Sterling. Sterling times the run very, very well in terms of committing his defender, which is something that Chelsea have had to rely on him to do all season for creation. And even more importantly, Palmer times his run into the box to meet the ball to absolute perfection. And that's something we really haven't seen much from Chelsea this year. So it was a nice, well-worked goal. There'd been very little to suggest that was going to happen, that they were going to put all the pieces together. Certainly nothing from that first half would have suggested that Chelsea were going to make a breakthrough, because it was all very slow, and in front of Sheffield United it was like half a dozen other home games we've seen this season. But once they got the goal, I think it relaxed them a little bit. The sequence that led to the second goal was a little bit chaotic, but they were putting Sheffield United under more and more pressure. And yeah, nice for Nicholas Jackson to get a little tap in as well. For not the first time we've said this season, nice for his confidence. Hopefully he can calm down and start finishing a bit more consistently now.
Well, look, he's got 7 Premier League goals, which is the same as Kai Havertz managed last season, and he finished as Chelsea's top scorer in the competition. So I would suggest that that's not too bad for somebody who's new to the league. Dom, somebody else who's new to the league is Georgia Petrovic. This is pretty much the perfect debut for him, right? Because I think he had one sort of decent save to make, but basically he could just stand and watch the rest of the game. I guess he'd prefer that rather than being peppered for 90 minutes on your Premier League full debut.
Yeah, I mean, I think even that save might have been going wide of the post. Anyway, it was a free kick, wasn't it? It allows him to settle into the role and feel like a Chelsea player, feel like a Premier League player after the distinctly more uncomfortable performance on what was his Premier League debut when he the weak punch, etc., in the previous game. But it's funny, Simon Johnson, who was at the game obviously for us, was debating, looking through ideas prior to the match, and one of those ideas was clearly Petrovic and how he adjusted and how he the impact that he made. But that became redundant by the simply there was nothing to talk about.
I would have liked to have seen him try to get 1,000 words out of Georgia Petrovic.
Well, I'm sure he could have managed it, but I'm just not sure it would have been very readable. That's pretty unfair on Si. But yeah, I mean, like, common sense prevailed on that front. But he'll have an extended run now by the look of things. It doesn't look as if Chelsea will prioritise the signing of a goalkeeper in January. So depending on how long Sanchez is out, Petrovic will have a chance now to show what he can do, and he will be better for 90 minutes of inaction against Sheffield United, because, I mean, as you say, Matt, in the intro there, that they are the worst team in the Premier League at the moment. So you can imagine that he's going to be busier in every single game he plays between now and Sanchez's potential return.
Yeah, he'll be busy on Tuesday, one would have thought. We'll look ahead to that Newcastle game later. In front of Petrovic, then, Liam, Andrew says the four centre-backs worked again. It's our best post-Reece setup. There wasn't really another choice here, was there? Because Malo Gusto clearly not fit to start. Mark Cucurella injured, and Ian Maatsen's not a left-back, is he?
Apparently not. The jury is very much in, at least in the court of Mauricio Pochettino, and has been since the start of pre-season. There wasn't another choice to the four centre-backs. I thought it was the right choice for this game in just when you're considering the ways that Sheffield United would have looked to score. You know, you've got Ollie McBurnie up front, you've got big burly centre-backs, even some of their midfielders look pretty imposing. So they were clearly looking for free kicks and corners. They didn't get many of those opportunities, but the ones that they did, I thought Chelsea's added height helped them deal with those situations reasonably comfortably. The one way it didn't help Chelsea, and I think that this kind of underlines why that particular back four is not a solution in a lot of situations, is that they got nothing going forward from either full-back position. And when you're trying to break down a team that's defending as deep as Sheffield United, it makes life so much harder. You know, whenever you watch Manchester City, Arsenal, Liverpool games, how do they break down deep-line opponents? They tend to do it by overloading them in wide areas with these little passing combinations and getting into positions to play cutbacks. You need numerical superiority in those areas, and the fullbacks are key to that. And if you've got two centre backs that don't really want to venture into the final third, and when they do, they can't really do a lot. When they get there, it does hurt you quite a bit. But defensively, it provided what Chelsea needed, which was a stable base.
If we go into midfield, then Enzo Fernandez dropped/rested. He did come off the bench in the second half, but if it was a dropping rather than a resting, I'm not sure he can have too many complaints. Conor Gallagher, though, Dom, your muse in many ways, and Simon's for his post-match piece for The Athletic. He's asking the question whether Chelsea should keep or sell. Avi's tweeted us to say, can't contemplate how the club are thinking of selling Connor. He doesn't want to sign a 7-8 year deal as per reports, but if he is sold, can you say the club is backing Poch? Poch really likes him. Max wanted to know, was this Gallagher's best game? Maybe overlooked by Palmer's goal and assist, but he was the spark. He was better than he has been in recent weeks. I think that's obvious. I mean, the point that Avi makes there is the pertinent one, I think. You want to be seen to be backing your manager, don't you? And I mean, really, what are you going to get for Conor Gallagher in terms of a transfer fee, given how little time he has left on his contract, that's going to make it worth selling somebody who can be, you know, an emblem of the academy and who the manager clearly thinks is an important player in the team? I've loaded the question nicely for you there, so you can say, yeah, they should sell him to Crystal Palace if you like.
Well, look, yeah, I'd love it if they agreed to sell him to Crystal Palace for a reasonable sum of money, and indeed that Crystal Palace in lowly 15th place could persuade Chelsea, you'll persuade Conor Gallagher rather that he should come to sell us. But the reality is, and my feeling on this is, it's staggering that January could see a parting of the ways. I cannot get my head around why there cannot be a compromise reached on this and a new contract signed. I understand at the moment the business reasons why he might be sold. This is a club that has overspent on a lot of players and needs to recoup some money if they're going to go back into the market, I would have thought. And Liam loves his pure profit references, and I'm sure that will come up again in January when it comes to all of the youth team graduates at Chelsea in terms of bringing revenue in. But he has become so integral to Pochettino's side. He's made the case for retaining involvement, heavy involvement, even once Lavia is fit, Iguchukwu's back, Chukwuemeka's back, when Caicedo is consistently up to speed and playing well every week. And when Enzo finds rediscovers some form, that trio looked as if it might be the answer at one point in Enzo, Caicedo and Gallagher. And to see that the board might welcome offers or look at offers, having not reached an agreement with him over a new contract, to me just feels utterly wrong. But I understand that he divides opinion with the fan base as well. I mean, you only have to look at the comments on Simon's piece this morning. It's pretty polarised both ways here. It's not an easy selection. And I also understand the context. Conor Gallagher, with the great respect, even for somebody with 11 England caps, if you're judging Chelsea by previous standards, probably isn't the type of player that you should be fighting tooth and nail to retain. Are you going to win a Premier League title with Conor Gallagher in your team? I don't know. But that isn't where Chelsea are at the moment. Chelsea need some kind of consistency. He is providing some kind of dynamism on the pitch, some energy. He has a feeling for this club where a lot of the other players have been brought in at vast expense and are still probably adjusting to new surroundings and developing those emotional ties with Chelsea. He has got those in place. I think that counts for something, and he should be retained at all costs. But saying all that, if £20 million gets your man in January, then I'm sure Palace will find that money.
I don't think it'll be 20 million.
No, but it won't be. That's the thing. I mean, but 40 million, in the grand scheme of things, Liam, they've spent £1 billion. I understand that there are clever ways of doing all this accountancy, and 40 million coming in now would actually be brilliant for their books in terms of, FFP, etc. But there's got to be some kind of proper long-term vision as well involved in Chelsea. And I'm not sure it sends out the right message.
Well, the most startling thing about the Gallagher situation, and, bear in mind this is, an ongoing source of inquiry for us with all parties, that there's nothing to suggest there have even really been serious conversations in quite a while about a new contract, which, given the fact that he has so little time left, 18 months remaining in January, is pretty remarkable. And, the thing I've heard a few times is that Chelsea don't want a repeat of the Mason Mount situation. Well, I think they've got one.
And everything that we're saying about Conor Gallagher here is exactly what we said about Mason Mount, right? Important to the team, yeah, but divides supporters. Is he good enough to get you over the line as a Premier League winner? But they're not going to get £50 million for Conor Gallagher, surely. They can't think that somebody's going to make that mistake twice like Man United did.
Well, look, I don't know if it's too early to call what United paid for Mason Mount a mistake. It's clear that he's another player they've brought in without a clear plan of how to use him. I don't know what Chelsea could get for Gallagher. I know that they didn't end up getting the 50 million asking price in the last window. And you would think, just based on the contract, that they would be less likely to get that this time. On the other hand, he's had a really good 6 months, maybe the best 6 months of his career so far, and that he's in every England squad. He's more integral to Chelsea than ever. He's increasingly the captain on the pitch. I think he has genuinely taken his game up a level. I don't think there's necessarily the toxicity there that there was with Mount towards the end, in terms of between player camp and club. The thing I've been told all the way through is that Gallagher wants to be a Chelsea player. But at the same time, I could easily see a scenario where you end up with, warring briefings of people at the club saying we had no alternative but to sell because he wouldn't sign a new deal, and people around the player saying he was forced out. We could genuinely end up in a very similar situation to where Mount ended up. And the problem with that from Chelsea's perspective is that, Romeo Lavia is a complete unknown at this point. I don't think they necessarily expected to be in a situation at this stage of the season where they haven't seen a minute of Lavia or Nkunku. You just have no idea what you're going to get out of two. That's more than £100 million worth of signings. And that's not the kind of uncertainty you want when you've got the future of a key first team player, which is what Gallagher currently is, in flux.
Lavia's got 29 Premier League games under his belt, hasn't he? And he's still 19.
Yeah, in maybe the weakest team in the Premier League over that time. So you're also judging him in a very different context to the one he'll be in at Chelsea. I don't know how many of those 29 games Southampton had more than 50% possession. So, he's going to be asked to do very different things.
But then you could argue the same, that is Gallagher. That is Gallagher when he went on loan to West Brom.
Yeah, I guess so. I guess so. I mean, the thing about Gallagher's journey is that he's played almost every week wherever he's been. He's got incredibly durable hamstrings and knees and calf muscles and all this sort of thing, like, which is quite rare at Chelsea, I think. He's just kind of fit and available to play, which I think is a chronically underrated ability at Stamford Bridge right now.
One thing we would like to see from Conor Gallagher is a bit more goals output. He's still yet to get one this season. So Lavia yet to come back. He's a Joe Shields guy. So, Dom, is Cole Palmer, who'd started a grand total of 3 Premier League games before he came to Chelsea, is he the most important player at the club at the moment?
Well, I listened to that debate on Match of the Day on Saturday, and he arguably is now that Reece James is injured again. As we speak at the moment, I mean, Cole Palmer does look a bit of a Rolls-Royce player amongst, what's a kind analogy? I've got to think my cars through. I'm not very much of a car.
Skodas, they're better than they used to be, but not very glamorous.
Yeah, what you want is an overpriced car that is decent, but not brilliant. This is getting to Simon Johnson territory again with the mixed metaphors. I had this chat with Simon this morning, actually, and part of me does wonder whether, I mean, Cole Palmer is clearly a good player. Don't be wrong. He's a good player who is really making a mark and a positive impression. But I wonder whether he's being made to look better than maybe we would pin to him, just because Chelsea have been generally so mediocre, and so many of the players that they brought in have taken so long to adjust to life at Stamford Bridge, whereas Palmer's made an immediate positive impression. And yeah, and Chelsea players look to him now. And you know, one tactical switch on Saturday, and Palmer unlocks stubborn defence, and that is a good skill to have. However, we need the context that was the worst team in the Premier League, a team with 8 points to their name all season. And again, I'm guilty of this in some ways. I suppose we have to draw a line under the previous great Chelsea tides and just forget about them now and just look at what we've got in front of us. And at the moment, Cole Palmer, yeah, as an attacking force, he probably is the most important player in that Chelsea team, because he gets the group functioning well and creating chances and breaking down opponents. And not many of his teammates do that. However, I don't think Chelsea would look at Cole Palmer now and think this is his ceiling. He's got further. He needs to go. He needs to develop more. He needs to get better and better and better, and more game time and more experiences on the pitch in the Premier League, hopefully in Europe again, as a Chelsea player in the future, will benefit him doing that. And then I think we'll look back at probably then and think, yeah, £40 million, whatever it was a bit of a steal.
One of the key questions for Chelsea's season, I think, is can Pochettino find the right balance with Nkunku and Palmer in this team when Nkunku's fit again? Because I think part of the reason, as Dom says, that Palmer looks so good, and this was hammered home for me against Sheffield United, is that he's the one attacker who's really good at moving between the lines. You know, they've got a lot of other attackers who like to run in behind into all that space that isn't there against most opponents. But Palmer can actually move in between and provide some imagination. And Nkunku can do that too. So if they can get the balance right between those two and maximise both of them in a structure, then Chelsea might actually have an attack worth worrying about from week to week. But right now, it's all very reliant on Palmer.
According to carscoops.com, the most overpriced car is a Jeep Wrangler. It's fun, but it doesn't shine nearly as brightly on the road as it does sans pavement. It's making me think of Mykhailo Mudryk a little bit, Liam. He got his fourth consecutive Premier League start. That's the longest run he's had of league starts since he's come to Chelsea. My goodness me, he's a frustrating player, isn't there? I mean, are we still at the point where we're thinking there's a talent there that can be unlocked, or are we thinking, is his football brain ever going to click into gear? Because he has those flashes, doesn't he? But his decision-making just doesn't seem to be improving at the rate one might expect.
Can you get Jeep Wranglers on like 7 or 8 year warranties? Yeah, I think I agree with all of that, Matt. I think we are still there with Mudryk, where you see the occasional flash and it usually relates to a burst of otherworldly speed or acceleration. But it's almost it's invariably followed by a bad decision or really poor execution. And that to some degree is to be expected when you consider how little high-level football he'd played before getting to Chelsea. You have to separate the fee, because I think there's no real justification for the fee other than Chelsea wanted to get him ahead of Arsenal. But what concerns me a little bit more, and what I thought we might have seen a little bit more progress on than we have, is that when he doesn't have the ball, he doesn't have a great idea of what to do at this level of football in terms of what movements to make, how best to create space for teammates. You know, you see Chelsea on the attack sometimes, and this wasn't really the case against Sheffield United because of how deep they were defending, but in other games I've seen it, particularly against United at Old Trafford, where they're attacking and they need attacking width, and he just makes a diagonal run into the middle of the pitch and ends up almost holding hands with Nicholas Jackson, and they've got nowhere to go, and they end up basically either having to go back or losing the ball. And that's not all down to him. He's not the only person making bad decisions in that regard, but it does feel particularly glaring with him that he doesn't always know where to be and where to go in certain situations. And defensively, I think he's certainly putting the effort in, but he was really rough on that end as well in terms of getting his body position right when pressing. I think he wants to be good. I think the desire is there to be a really good Premier League player, but he doesn't have the know-how yet. And I just don't know how long that's going to take to come, or if it comes at all to the level it needs to.
I find it all a very refreshing throwback, to be honest. I think I grew up in an era where wingers were supposed to be like this, completely unpredictable, offered little flashes here and there and tantalising glimpses of their quality and what they could produce, but never quite reach the consistency levels that you want them to do.
Turbo Gronkier.
Yeah, well, yeah, there's an element of that. I'm thinking more like, I mean, look, again, like going back to the modern era, there's something almost Yannick Bolasie about it. It's like very rough and ready. You can tell there's a real talent there, but it just takes a while for it to come through to actually produce a level of consistency. And we have to remember how young Mudryk is and the background and the disruption, etc. And just hope that he develops training with good players, and they are good players at Chelsea. I've been unfair with my poor battered car analogy in the previous section, but they're decent players. He's got a good coach there to talk him through the development of his game. He will get better and better and better, but it's that old word, isn't it? Patience. You just got to give him a bit of time. There isn't a lot of patience in football at the moment, particularly at Chelsea.
Yeah, coming up to a year as a Chelsea player, Mykhailo Mudryk. All right, that was Sheffield United, a very enjoyably routine and fairly insignificant game that ended in a Chelsea victory. It's been too long since we've had one of those. All right, when is a Carabao Cup quarterfinal the most important game of the season? When you've been in a year-long funk. The big Newcastle preview comes next.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard it right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask me. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to michelobultra.com/courtside to learn more.
So Chelsea and Newcastle meeting at the Bridge on Tuesday, placing the League Cup semi-final at stake. Newcastle definitely more bothered about it than they were this time last week. Simon asked Maurizio Pochettino about the game post-Sheffield United. Here's what he said.
No, we want to win this competition, but first of all, we need to think and try to recover the player, and we are going to play with the best combination that as possible. It's a final for us. It's going to be an opportunity to go to a semi-final, and of course, really important game. For different reasons, but I think step by step, the competition is good, and it's one of the competitions that we're going to go through.
Here's Prasanna, who got in touch to say, Chelsea in the quarterfinal of the League Cup, how important are cup runs for Chelsea this season, especially since they provide entry to next season's European competitions. Liam, I keep coming back in my mind to Mikel Arteta winning the FA Cup in 2020, and that maybe being something which extended his time at Arsenal when he had some pretty bad results around that. Do you think this could do something similar for Maurizio Pochettino if he was able to guide Chelsea to this trophy?
I see you, Matt, covertly laying the blame for the Mikel Arteta golden age at Chelsea's door. Yeah, I mean, there isn't the same sense of jeopardy right now with Pochettino, I don't think. This might age badly, but we don't get that impression right now in terms of his job security. But for belief in the project, as it were, I think cup runs can be very important, and winning one of these things, I think it'd be huge for a group of players that have not really done anything of note together yet. And it would be really important for, well, it'd certainly be really important for this ownership just to provide a bit of credibility as to the club building in the right direction, because I think that confidence, certainly on the supporter side, is in short supply at the moment. So this is a really big game. And I think, it's a bigger game for Newcastle now than it was even a week ago, because they're out of the Champions League. They're out of Europe entirely for the rest of the season. And, you know, a club with their history can't afford to just sack off domestic cup competitions. You know, they haven't got enough of those in their trophy cabinet to do that. So I think this is going to be a really big game, a really intense game. And the question for me is which team has the physical intensity to win it, because you've got two really injury hit squads that haven't been able to rotate as much as their coaches would have liked over the last few weeks. And two coaches that really demand that level of running and pressing from their players. So I feel like maybe the team that works harder ends up winning this. I don't necessarily expect a really high quality game, but certainly this competition has opened up to a degree for Chelsea or Newcastle or anyone else who might want to win. So it's about going out there and taking it now.
Newcastle have only actually won twice away from home all season, and none of their last five games in all competitions. We say, Dom, that it's a more significant game for them now than it was when they were still in European competition. But you think, well, Eddie Howe might have played a slightly weakened side, but he doesn't do that, does he? Because A, he can't, but he just tends to stick to the same team anyway. So maybe it wouldn't have had that significant an impact on the side that Howe selected. And he's got what? Cher and Joe Linton probably not going to be able to play in this game, having become the latest to limp out of a Newcastle team on Saturday.
Yeah, only marginally counterbalanced by Isak's potential return from a groin problem. But I mean, I think he plays the same side out of necessity. And I know we've spent a lot of this season talking about how hefty Chelsea's injury list is, and quite rightly so. I mean, it's ridiculous the numbers of problems that they've picked up over the course of the season. But Newcastle are a state as well in that regard. And I don't think they have the depth of squad quite yet to cope with that and give people rests, really. I mean, I suppose he would argue that he gave Isak a bit of a rest at the weekend. You know, he was in the fatigued zone or red zone or whatever we call it, with his groin problem and sat out the game against Fulham. And thankfully for Newcastle, Raul Jimenez's bizarre first half challenge allowed them to have a bit of a breather in the second and win that game at a canter. But you're right, Newcastle's away form is troubling. It's really that they haven't won away since they won at Old Trafford in the previous round. Normally speaking, they would be there for the taking, but you just wonder whether they will arrive at Stamford Bridge with their sort of, you know, steeled and ready for this, you know, the resolve to push forward to a second successive League Cup final, having come so close last year against Manchester United. And it's going to be a fascinating game. It's going to be brilliant. I think it does mean something. As Liam says, it's important for Pochettino, it's important for Chelsea to get through. And if you actually look at the other teams in this quarterfinal draw, I mean, you know, Liverpool are still in there, but other than that, it's really the favourites are going to come from this tie as to who goes and claims it. So it's a real opportunity, and it's one they have to take. Chelsea have to take. They have to exploit the fact that Newcastle are probably slightly more wounded than they are, and it's not often that Chelsea can say that this season.
Liam, something else which might be a factor, I suppose, in this game is the fact that Chelsea put in what I would consider to be their worst performance at St James's Park a couple of weeks ago. That certainly be fresh in Maurizio Pochettino's mind, right? To try and put right the wrongs of St James's Park.
Yeah, and you would hope it would be fresh in the minds of the players that were responsible for that performance, and that they might take it a bit personally, that they just allowed Newcastle to run all over them in the second half. And that's why I think the physical intensity is key, because that I've watched Newcastle quite a bit. I've been watching them a bit in the Champions League this year. And even though they've struggled in quite a few of those games and ultimately didn't get through in that group, in order to get anywhere against them, you have to match their energy. That is the bare minimum. If you don't do that, you're not going to win, and you probably will lose, because they're just a really physical side. You know, they're quite cynically physical at times, but you know, I don't say that as an insult. I think good teams have to have that, or it's certainly a positive if they do. You know, there is an element of Kieran Trippier bringing back the Atletico Madrid vibes.
Howe's team was like that at Bournemouth, by the way. It's not just a Newcastle thing.
Yeah, well, they certainly had their moments at Stamford Bridge as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
Against Chelsea. So Chelsea will have to deal with that. And there have been some feisty games at St James's Park between the two teams before. And I think the biggest indictment of that loss was that there wasn't really any tension, because Chelsea just didn't match that level of intensity. So that's number one. And then it's about finding moments of quality. And we know that's been a bit of a problem for Chelsea at times this season as well. But they do have Palmer in good form. I think Sterling's been reasonably reliable. Jackson's managed to score again. There's always a nuisance factor with him, at least, even if he struggles to stay onside. And Nkunku now is apparently fit enough to be in squads, and maybe a card that you can play off the bench in this game. I thought it was interesting that Pochettino didn't bring him on against Sheffield United, and I thought that may have been with a view to keeping those potential minutes in his legs for this game. So we'll see if he's able to come on and contribute, but that could be a little bit of an X factor for Chelsea.
What state of the game, Dom, do you think would mean that we'd be most likely to see Nkunku? Because you would have thought that Saturday 2-0 and cruising against a poor team might have been that. So is it going to be more of a desperation, Chelsea are losing, let's throw him on and see if he can do something, or is he just going to be an unused sub for a few games and we might see him more likely, I don't know, against your lot or Luton or something in a couple of weeks' time?
I wonder whether what my lot did on Saturday is an indication of what a comfortable 2-0 lead against a poor team means in the Premier League. And you don't want to take that risk when you're in a situation where, I mean, anything other than a victory against Sheffield United would have been, you know, disastrous for Chelsea and Pochettino. I think it just would have felt awful. So I can sort of understand that there was a level of caution in that. I mean, I know that the bulk of the substitutions came on after 89 minutes, but really, what's the point of bringing somebody in after 89 minutes in that game? You probably want him to have a grander entrance than that. I would have thought, if Chelsea have a narrow lead against Newcastle and you want to give Newcastle something else to think about, something else to worry about in the last 20 minutes, 30 minutes of a game, then this might be an opportunity for him to do that. But we have to remember that Pochettino and his medical staff and his coaching staff and the sports scientists there will know how much time Christopher Nkunku can play in a game safely at this point. We have to trust them. They've seen his performances on the training pitch. They will be better judges than any of us as to when he can come on and make an impact. And if that is, you know, on the 27th against Palace, then fair enough. If that's in the new year, if it's even FA Cup third round day, I think we just have to trust them on it and again, be patient on it, because that was such a lengthy period out. He is a player that is going to play such a key part, hopefully, in the second half of the season. There's no point rushing him in now. Let's just trust their judgment on it. And I'm sure we'll see cameos, whether that comes against Newcastle, whether that comes against Wolves or Palace or whatever in the weeks to come. But I think we just have to have a bit of faith in their judgment on it.
All right, well, whether he features or not on Tuesday, we will react to the game in our final pod of the year, which will come up on Thursday. Next today, though, we're going to round up the rest of the Chelsea news, starting with the women's team.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is supported by Season 3 of FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher division. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenges and rise again into League 1? FX is Welcome to Wrexham. Catch all new episodes Thursdays on FX. Stream on Hulu.
James charges forward. Lauren James with the shot. Lauren James with the goal. Magic, magic, magic. And after a tough week, Lauren James finds the back of the net with yet another stunning strike. Her seventh of the season, and this game needed that.
Well, Arsenal handed Chelsea a paddling in the WSL last week, and then they handed the advantage back to the Blues by losing the North London derby on Saturday. Thanks, guys. Chelsea took that advantage and reinforced it by comfortably beating Bristol City at Ashton Gate on Sunday. It means they're 3 points clear at the top of the table. The WSL is now on a winter break until the third week of January. Manchester City and Arsenal level on 22 points behind the Blues. Oh, I'm trying to find another way of asking you about Lauren James being good at football, Dom. But even by her standards, that goal was super impressive. I mean, effortless, almost from nothing. The kind of thing that just makes you so jealous of footballers, doesn't it? You think, I could never do that if I tried my hardest 100 times, and you've just kind of done it as an afterthought.
100 times? I mean, give it 1,000, surely. Yeah. I mean, it's yeah, it's a brilliant, brilliant goal. I mean, she collects possession in a sort of pocket of space outside the box. But from the moment she collects the ball and turns away, I think it's Rodgers from the Bristol City midfield, just spins in behind and creates a space with a diagonal run that Rodgers can't, she just can't catch her. And the finish back across the goalkeeper into the top right corner is stunning, absolutely stunning. And there's a grace to it, as you say. It does look effortless. It just looks like, oh, you know, I'm bored of this game now. I'm going to illuminate it with something and just settle the points against the worst team in the division. But the emphatic nature of the finish and almost the disdain with which she smashes that ball into that top corner is wonderful to see. And yeah, and she is a player of such class and quality. She is somebody to be cherished in that Chelsea team. And she will illuminate a lot of WSL matches this season, I'm sure. But that whether she actually scores a better goal than that, I'm not sure.
Matt, can you think of another footballer in the men or women's games that could bury a left-footed shot into the top corner from 25 yards and then curl a right-footed shot off the crossbar from 30 in the same game?
You know, she reminds me of a little bit, and this is showing my age, but she reminds me a bit of Chris Waddle with that kind of style that she's got around the
swagger,
ball.
Swagger, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. But again, effortless is the word I keep coming back to, but just kind of like, okay, well, let the kids play for a little bit and then the adult can pick up the ball and show you how it's all done. It's amazing. I mean, Cuthbert's volley wasn't bad for the second goal either, we should say. And then Sam Kerr wraps it up just before the hour. Neve Charles got sent off late on for a second booking. We speak a lot, Liam, don't we, about Chelsea's squad depth. And we saw that here because they look pretty tired against Häcken on Thursday of last week. 0-0 draw at the Bridge. They go to Sweden on Wednesday. But here, Emma Hayes is able to bring in Hannah Hampton. Remember, she's an England international, the third choice goalie for her debut. Made a good save as well. And Micah Hamano comes off the bench, who Jesse, for one, has raved about and everybody seems to like the look of. So, yeah, again, the fact that Chelsea have got such a deep stack squad paying dividends here.
I know that Emma Hayes and Paul Green have always tried to create a situation with the squad whereby Chelsea women's training sessions are tougher than about 70% of their matches, 70-80% of their matches. And I think you see that at times like this, the quality running right through the depth chart is just really formidable. And they're just built to win leagues, aren't they? And you saw the way that they bounced back from that Arsenal setback, which was a real body blow, I think. And this was clearly, you know, exactly the type of game that you'd want. Bristol City, a bottom of the league, even away from home, you know, you're not expecting much trouble from a game like that. But to win it as convincingly as they did, and then to turn around at the break point, WSL, and say, well, you know, Arsenal have put us on notice, but we're 3 points ahead. We're 3 points ahead of Manchester City as well. And the season's not that long. You know, we're already nearly halfway through. So if you're one of the teams trying to chase Chelsea at this point, you're not feeling great about yourselves, because historically there's really almost no margin for error in the WSL title race. And Chelsea are more used to that than anyone else. And they've, you know, they've handled their business enough times that the Arsenal game is not a killer for them.
Yeah, we've mentioned it a couple of times on the pod this year that nobody's ever won the WSL having lost more than two games in the season. And Manchester City and Arsenal have both already been beaten twice, just one defeat for Chelsea so far. We'll let you know on Thursday how they get on in Sweden when they play Häcken in the Champions League. Elsewhere in Chelsea news, on Sunday, the under-21s went to Liverpool in PL2. They were beaten 2-1 after a late Bobby Clark winner. 24 hours prior, the under-18s put on quite the show at Cobham. They whooped West Brom 9-1. Shimi Muyiwa got a first half hat trick. Harrison McMahon scored a goal that would make Gazza blush. And Danelle McNeely and Chinozi Chibuzi bagged late braces amidst a few other goals as well. So well done to Hassan Suleiman and his team. It was a really sensational performance, as you might expect, given that they scored 9 goals. Whether you think this has been a sensational performance from us or not, I would encourage or implore you to give us the Christmas gift of a nice rating on iTunes, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. And if you want to leave a review as well, that would be much appreciated to you. TheAthletic.com/ChelseaPod is the place to go to sign up if you aren't currently a subscriber. At the moment, it'll only cost you £1 a month. It'd make a nice Christmas gift too. If you do sign up, use that link. That helps the pod out too. We are at SO Cobham Pod on Twitter/X if you want to give us a follow. As I say, we are going to be back on Thursday. It'll be a big show as well because it's our final one before the Christmas break. Until then, I give my thanks to Dom, to Liam, to Lucy, and to you for joining us. And we'll catch up with you later in the week when Chelsea will be in the League Cup semi-final, hopefully. Bye for now.
The Athletic.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.